to chapter 39 of Genesis. I know that some of you are kind of getting tired of Joseph. His brothers did too. Not saying that you're like them, but if the shoe fits. So this is not a message about Joseph. This is a message about God. That you are never alone, because God said he would never leave us nor would he forsake us. And we looked at Joseph's early years, how God maneuvered things and planned things and brought about things just so, according to his will, his desire, in Joseph's life and Joseph's father's life and the family's life. And when the dreams of Joseph collapsed, seemingly, and when his world turned upside down in his viewpoint, how God was still on the scene and God was protecting him. And God set the stage for his blessing and the blessing of the nation that was going to be born from that family. And that was our first point on the outline. God protected him. We're going to move from there to look at how God prospered him. So this whole message is about God going before Joseph in all the events of his life. When his brothers turned against him, God was there. And God used those brothers to do his will. In other words, they were not able to kill him. They just put him in a pit. And they wasn't able to keep him there. They took him out and sold him to some Midianites or Ishmaelites. In verse 37, it says Midianites. In verse 39, it says Ishmaelites. And they're one and the same people. And they sold him for the price of a crippled slave to the Ishmaelites, who took him down into Egypt. And they wanted to make some good money on him. So they put him in the slave auction. And it was just at that moment that Potiphar realized, I need another slave. So he went to the slave market just on the day that Joseph came up on the slave market, because the Ishmaelites had just got there and wanted to sell him. God's timing is perfect, people. And Potiphar bought him. Probably got a pretty good deal on him. He was a young man, 17 years old. His world had come crashing down, but his character had not. He was still a man of God. So in verse 2 and 3 of chapter 39, we read, the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything that he did and that the Lord made all that he did prosper in his hand. What a testimony of Joseph, but more than that, of God to Potiphar, this Egyptian ruler. And God began to prosper him. God's desire is that all of us prosper and be in health, even as our soul prospers. That's scripture. So Joseph arrived in Egypt. He no longer had his coat of many colors. His brothers had stripped that from him. And remember, they dipped it in blood and took it to their father and said, "Your son's dead. Look at this coat and make sure that this is his coat." And that way it would even be greater ingrained in daddy's mind that my son, my favorite son, the son that I had chosen to come after me and receive all of these goods that the family has and be in charge of the family, that one is dead. So that coat of many colors was gone. Some of us would look at it and say, well, now Joseph's favoredness is gone. He's no longer the favored son. But God has something to say about that. Let me tell you something. Clothes don't make the man. I know that Madison Avenue would have you think that clothes make the man. If you buy this suit, the women will just drape all over you. If that's what you want. I don't, baby. That's why I don't buy those suits. But clothes won't make the difference. Joseph had lost his coat. He no longer had that favored status. He may have lost the coat, but his character was still intact. And that's what God is pointing out by the Holy Spirit in some of these scriptures. That in verses 2 and 3, Potiphar saw that God's hand was on him. Potiphar saw that he was blessed in everything that he did. And everything that he put his hand to just literally turned to gold. The coat that Jacob had given him was a symbol of his position in the family. It marked him as an overseer or the overseer. It marked him as the head of the family. It marked him as the one in charge of all the things family-oriented. It marked him as a man of authority. But that coat was gone. Joseph's authority did not come from that coat. His authority was not wrapped up in a coat of many colors. His authority did not come from a piece of cloth. Joseph's authority came from his character. God is more interested in your heart than your outside. God's more interested in what you do as a man or a woman dedicated to Him than what you wear. He was a godly young man who walked before his father in absolute integrity. His word was his bond, and God saw that, and God knew that. When Joseph lost his coat, he lost nothing that made him great in God's eyes or in people's eyes. Joseph's greatness did not come from the clothes on his body, but the character of his heart. He may have worn the humble garments of a slave at this point, but he was still a man of character and dignity and integrity. And immediately, the leader, Potiphar, the secret agent man, the James Bond of Egypt, he saw in this guy those important attributes. Was the surroundings good? No, he was a slave. Were slaves able to dress in fancy clothes? No. Usually they wore rags. The hand-me-down of hand-me-downs of hand-me-downs of hand-me-downs. I don't know if when you were young, you got hand-me-downs. But somebody else had already got all the good out of it. In my family, I got the hand-me-downs. And my sister had already worn her all those clothes real good. More than once, Mom took one of my sister's dresses and made me a shirt out of it. I remember the first shirt Mom made me. Oh, I love her. I miss her so much. She said, I'm going to make you a shirt. I said, okay. And she made me a shirt. And I said, I need pockets on my shirt, Mama. So she put me pockets on it. One was up here and one was down here. And she made me wear it to school. All the kids made fun of me. But their clothes wasn't much better than mine. 1955, you didn't dress the way you do today. You wore what you had. And you didn't have much. That's the way the slave was. But every place that Joseph walked, there was that air of power and that sense of rulership that walked with him. Potiphar saw it and was amazed that everything that his hand undertook, God was prospering. And he didn't have a worry in the world now because he had Joseph in charge. Listen, that ought to be our testimony, that we can be so trusted, that we're so infused with God, that God is blessing through our lives, that our bosses or our neighbors or our friends, they see coming from our life the testimony that came from Joseph's life, that God is with us through everything. In order for that to happen, we too have to have character and integrity. I've told the story about the day I pulled out of one of the restaurant chains, and I noticed that my car coughed, and I was almost out of gas. And there was a super test station right across the road, so I just pulled right across the road and into that super test station. And then I remembered that I had paid all of my money back over at the restaurant when I had that baked potato and I left a dollar tip. I was broke. I had my checkbook, though. And I walked in to the station and I said, "Ma'am, I am out of gas. I'm a pastor." And she said, "A what?" I said, "I'm a pastor." And she said, "You're going to want to give me a check, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I pastor First Assembly of God. It's over on 14th Street, which was the next major road over. And I'm that little pink church down there." And she said, "Absolutely not." She said, "Every preacher that I've ever extended any credit or took checks from them, those checks bounce or they've left me with a bill. And I will not give you any gas for your check." And I got mad. I wanted to get even. I wanted to lay hands on her. Suddenly. But I knew that I couldn't, because my car was at her pumps and I was empty. So I went and looked all through the car and I found 50 cents. It was in pennies and dimes. And I bought 50 cents worth of gas in 1977. And you could get some gas back then for that. You can't now, but you could then. But I got to thinking, what an indictment that kind of thought is in somebody's mind that I know needs to get saved. I could tell by the way she talked. She needed Jesus, and I wanted to give him to her. When we don't walk with integrity and with character, people notice. There should be no Christian that owes big bills and don't pay. Because God said He would supply. You can go on your knees and you can talk to God about it, and God will bless you in such a way that you can take care of some of those things. Oh, I know. Yeah, I live by credit too. But I don't let it get way past due if I can possibly help it. And even when we had nothing, we didn't let it go into arrears. I don't have much, but I've got a character and I've got some integrity. And people notice when it's absent, but people notice when it's present too. And we need to pay attention to things like that. Some people are different depending on when you meet them. You meet them in church and they're way up here, and you meet them on the street and they're way down there. And they act different in different places. People notice that. When you meet them at church, they're one person, and when you meet them at work, they're another person. Ought not be. I would suggest that you need to be the same people every day that you are in church. You need to be godly. We should strive to do the right thing at the right time, all the time. We should determine in our hearts that we will have a good attitude and that demonstrate that Christ-likeness to everybody that we meet and go out of our way to do so. Potiphar saw these kind of things in Joseph. When Joseph arrived in Egypt, he could have taken several different paths. He had a right to be angry. He had a right to be vengeful. He had a right to be ugly. Everything that his dad had promised was gone. Everything God had promised seemingly was gone. He could have taken several different directions. He could have adopted the ways and the customs of Egypt, that new land in which he was going into. And he could have become just like them. He could have abandoned his God and embraced the many gods of Egypt. But Joseph stayed true. You see, he may have been purchased by Potiphar, but Joseph belonged to God. His whole heart, his whole mind, his whole attitude belonged to God. Oh, Potiphar had that piece of paper. I bought this boy. But his heart, his mind, his soul, his spirit belonged to God. And he wasn't changing for nobody. He had already made up his mind how things were going to be in his life. He made up his mind way back in the tent of his father, way back when maybe even his mother was still alive. He realized, I'm going to serve God with everything that's in me. He heard all the stories of Abraham and Isaac. He knew what had come down the pike. It made no difference to Joseph whether he was back in his father's house or whether he was in the bottom of a pit or whether he was in shackles belonging to traitors or maybe in the house of a master in Egypt. Joseph had already purposed in his heart, he had already decided in his mind that he was always going to do the right thing and honor God. And that's exactly what he was doing. Joseph was a man of integrity, regardless of the situation in which he found himself. Just like Joseph, you and I need to determine and establish some boundaries for our lives. We need to make up our minds that there are some things that we're just not going to do. There are some lines that we are not going to cross. And the earlier we do it, the better off we'll be. And I'm talking about all kinds of things, but a few would be like drinking and drugs and bad language and premarital sex and adultery and pornography and gossip. If we make up our mind, I'm not going there. I'm not crossing those lines. Lying, cheating, stealing. I'm not going there. I'm not going to be that kind of person. Then if someday that situation arises and the opportunity presents itself, you don't have to debate it. You don't have to wonder, what am I going to do? You already know, I've made up my mind, I'm not going there. We know exactly what we will do and what we will not do. We made up our minds years ago. And I hope that's where every one of us is, especially the young people, that you're making up your mind. We've already passed that gauntlet. And the issue is settled. That's the way it was for Joseph. He knew where he would go and where he would not go and what he would do and what he would not do. And it was apparent to everybody around him. We're told in verse 2 that Joseph was a prosperous man. In verse 3, it tells us that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Some people might have looked at Joseph's progress in the home of Potiphar and said, man, he's lucky. He's got good luck. To be sold to that rich man that just cuts him a lot of slack. He's lucky. All the other slaves would have looked at him and say, man, that guy's so lucky. They would see a young man like Joseph. He had had some bad breaks, but now things are turning around for him. He's got it made. Everything that Potiphar owns, and it was a lot of stuff, was put into his care. He can write his own ticket. That's the way it looks to the outside. Things are heading our way. We're blessed. We're lucky. And people look at that and say, man, I wish I had that kind of luck. But I want you to understand something this morning. Luck had nothing to do with Joseph's success. In fact, hear me, there's no such thing as luck for Christians. Because God is in it. He's in it all. There's nothing that pertains to your life that God's not in. There is no thing such as luck in a Christian's life. Luck is something for fairy tales and mythical creatures, not for children of the living God, whose hand is upon us day and night, moving us toward prosperity, moving us toward blessing, moving us toward favor. The favor of God is the most precious thing that we could ask for, when God would smile upon us with favor. It's so far beyond anything that luck could ever produce. Joseph prospered because God purposefully blessed him. Joseph prospered because God saw in Joseph a man that he could trust to do his perfect will. What some call luck in a person's life may be nothing more than a manifestation of the good, godly character that he possesses, and that God's favor is upon his life. You and I need to be seeking for God's favor and blessing. Now stay with me for the next few minutes, please. Maybe God blesses some people more than He blesses other people because of their character and integrity. You and I can put ourselves in the place of blessing by the life that we live. If we're always living on the edge, and if we're always seeing how close we can get to sin without actually stepping into it, then we're living a dangerous life. And why should God give us favor and blessing? If you want God's perfect blessing and you want His perfect favor, then get into the very center of His will and become obedient to Him in all things and have character and integrity. Maybe some people enjoy blessings because they have those characteristics of character and integrity. Maybe they're blessed because God can trust them to do the right thing all the time. What I want you to see here, what I want you to understand here is this. Joseph was in a bad situation, but he still lived a life that was blessed by God. Greatly blessed by God. I don't care what kind of situation you're in. I don't care what hardships you're facing. I don't care what's going on in your life. You can live that life blessed. And you can live in the best of circumstance that you're in when you live for God. And whenever you are obedient to Him, I'm sure that the life of a slave was full of drudgery, service. Potiphar wants you at 11 o'clock at night. Joseph, you got to get up, get in there. Yes, sir. You want a glass of water? Sure thing. You run, get water, you bring it back. You go back, you lay down. Maybe he's got an upset stomach. Joseph, you run in there. Yes, sir. You want a Tums? Sure thing. I'll go get you a piece of chalk. I'll dip it in some cherry juice. You'll like it. It'll help. Whatever he wanted, Joseph was called upon. That service. And he was a slave. He was expected to do that. But he was faithful in doing that to his master, which was a rich dude. His character caused him to be faithful to God and to be faithful to his human master. As a result, God blessed his life. God blessed his work. God blessed the product of his hands. So I don't want you to miss these two thoughts. Just because you're going through trials or problems or hard times, it does not mean that God is not blessing you. Just because life is not a bowl of cherries does not mean that God's not blessing you. Yes, cherries have pits. Every one of them. So if you, even if you've got a life with a bowl full of cherries, don't bite too hard. You'll break your teeth. Be careful. I like what Irma Bombreck, easy for me to say, she wrote a book. Say the greenest grass is over the septic tank. You'll catch that one this afternoon. The baby got it. Love it. Maybe your life is kind of rough right now. And the problems keep popping up and the hard times are there. But God is still there and God can bless you right on through that. You might not see Him moving in your life. But trust Him. In His time, in His way, He will manifest His presence and His glory and His power in your situation. And not only will you realize it, others around you will realize it. The second thing, Joseph made the best of his terrible situation. He demonstrated that proper attitude, that proper mindset in the midst of his trials. So should we. The secret to happiness in the tough times is how you respond to what's happening to you. It's not what's happening to you. It's how you respond to it. That's the secret to happiness. 90% of living a joyful life is simply responding well to the trials that you face. Life is what you make it. Joseph paints that picture in bright colors so that we can't miss it. Perhaps you've heard of the two grasshoppers. They fell in a bucket of fresh milk. And one was so upset, so fearful, that he lost all hope. And he sank down below the milk and he drowned. The other one, he became determined. He says, I can beat this situation. I got kids at home. I got mom. I need to go. So he began to stroke. And he stroked and he stroked and he stroked and he stroked. And the more that he kicked, the thicker that milk got. Till he churned it into butter. And then he simply just walked out of his prison. You see, it's all about how we handle the things life throws at us. Either you'll handle it or it'll handle you. John Bunyan, he was thrown into prison in the 17th century in England. For one reason, he preached the gospel on the street. For 12 years, he was in jail because the king kept saying, if you'll just promise you won't preach, you can get out. Even brought his wife and his little girl to see him there in prison. And the little girl crawled up on his lap and put her arms around her daddy's neck and said, "Daddy, please come home." And the King of England said, "Listen, we're not mean people. If you'll just promise not to preach, we'll let you out of here and you can catch them before they get across the square." And John Bunyan said, "I will not." There in his cell, he had a three-legged stool. And he would sit on that stool day after day. And suddenly he realized, "I'm getting comfortable in here." So he took one of the legs off and left two so that he couldn't get too comfortable. But then he had that other leg, so he made a flute out of it so that he could play Christian music and lift his spirit. It was while he was sitting on that two-legged stool that he penned Pilgrim's Progress. It's an allegory of the Christian life, and it's the second greatest selling book in history. Only the Bible has sold more copies than Pilgrim's Progress has sold. John Bunyan could have given up. Instead, he used his trials as a place to glorify God. And God blessed him. God is looking for men and women of faith and faithfulness, of character and integrity. He's still looking for people that he can use in these days that would bring glory to his name. And I draw it all together. In Ravensbrück death camp, operated by the Nazis, there was a young woman, young, pretty. Her name was Corrie ten Boom. She was forced to endure the most appalling atrocities that you could possibly imagine, and possibly even some that you can't imagine. She was starved. She was beaten. She was threatened regularly. Susan's dad went through the same thing. He was a prisoner of war. Not in Ravensbrück, but not too far from it. He was in Stalag 17B. He knew. He understood. She was forced to live with lice, fleas, rats, all kinds of bugs. She witnessed the death of her younger sister, who was weaker than she. She saw thousands of Jews and Jewish sympathizers leave that place through the smokestacks of the crematories. Corrie ten Boom said, "I can't understand why, along with thousands of others, I was forced to endure such hardships and agony." But Corrie ten Boom, inmate number 66730, and it was tattooed on her skin, she determined in her heart that while she was there in Ravensbrück, that she would be the very best Christian that she could possibly be. In the middle of all that hate, in the middle of all that death, in barracks number 28, Corrie ten Boom started a secret Bible study. And she helped many, many other prisoners make it through those difficult years until eventually she won her freedom. Many people at that point might have become embittered. That kind of experience would have soured any of us. But Corrie ten Boom was greatly used by God after World War II. She carried his message literally around the world. And she saw tens of thousands learn the power of grace and forgiveness. She shared love. She took that impossible situation and turned it around, and it gave her a platform to glorify God that changed the life of so many. I don't know what kind of opportunity you might have this morning, but you might be right in the throes of an opportunity to glorify God. Things might be tough where you are. God can handle that, and he can help you handle it if you'll just let him. God prospered. He protected, and now he's prospered Joseph. When you're protected and when you've prospered, then you go to the next step, and that's promotion. But we'll get to that some other time. Where are you right now? Where is God in your life? Have you made up your mind? Have you made up your heart? I hope so. Bow your heads with me, would you please? Regardless of what you're facing, regardless of how difficult the trials may be, God said when we cling to him, when we follow him, that he'll be right there with us on every step. Whether those steps are in a prison or in prosperity, whether they're in a pit or a prison or a palace. So I don't know where you are, but I know this: God will give you grace. Just make up your mind right now that I'll give him all that I've got, and I'll follow with him. I'll walk with him wherever. I'll never forsake him, because he'll never forsake me. So with every head bowed and every eye closed, no one looking around, this is a private moment, just between me and you and God. You'd say, Pastor, I'm kind of struggling right now. Things aren't going too good and I'm not responding very well. need your prayers because I need to do what you talked about this morning. Pastor, would you pray for me? Pray for my family and my situation. If that's where you are, would you just slip your hand heavenward? Yeah. You know, we may be sitting here this morning. We don't know what that person just down the row is having to face. We don't know what might be going on in the life of that person in front of us or behind us. But some people have it pretty hard. And I realize that. And I want to make your load lighter. I want to make your way easier.